This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
The Kakadu Plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about toothpicks.
Yes. And it is surprisingly perhaps fun. It's a fun one.
Yeah, yeah. There was, all right, so we had been reached out to by some of the fine humans at our company to ask if we would want to do an episode surrounding, like, Super Bowl-related topics. And I know I just said the word. You, even in the outline.
Get a suit.
Even in the outline, you write the big game as though someone is going to bust into our Google Docs.
I wouldn't put it past them. I'm ready for the knock on my closet studio door any minute.
They really don't. It's really not like that. They really...
Lauren.
We're not selling anything. We're not marketing anything based on the Super Bowl. We're just saying that it's happening.
We're selling our personalities and our brand.
I guess, but...
I feel like I just put a toothpick in your argument.
Oh no. Oh dear.
Mm-hmm.
But right, and so we were like, oh, all right, like what can we talk about surrounding Super Bowl sort of topics? And I was like, I don't know, what about like cocktail picks, what about like toothpicks? Yeah,
because we've done a lot of the pretty big Super Bowl adjacent foods already.
Mm-hmm.
We did discuss doing Cincinnati chili, but we thought that would be like picking a side. So
yeah,
we backed away from that one.
Yeah. But yeah, toothpicks.
Yeah, because they are involved in a lot of snacks. And actually, I bought some toothpicks many years ago, when we were playing D&D pretty regularly, and I would make all those snacks, like a lot of things,
sure.
I would make required toothpicks.
Yeah, for serving. Yeah, to have little handheld bites. Sure.
Yes. I have a lot of toothpick thoughts, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. So I used to be extremely anti-toothpick. In high school,
oh.
I thought they were a waste. Like, I just, I couldn't get behind it.
You were like, environmentally speaking, like, this is ridiculous to use a single-use thing and then throw it away. Okay.
Right. But I say that as in I'm not entirely sure which is worse, toothpicks or floss.
Oh.
But
well.
at the time, I was very anti-toothpick, and I got in a big fight with our class president, actually, in high school.
Oh.
Where he was, like, trying to, I guess, prove I was a hypocrite. Because he's like, you sit in chairs. They're made of wood. And I was like, but you could use floss. You don't need toothpicks. We got, it was a whole blowout. Not sure how I feel about it looking back. I guess I stood up for my ideals. I don't know how great of my ideals they were, but...
But you stood up for yourself, and that's good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember this fight. We were in front of the classroom fighting about this. Yeah.
I do not have any emotionally charged toothpick story.
I'm shocked. Shocked, Lauren. I have another one, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so... In doing this research, it was really interesting because when you think about it, toothpicks are used for a lot of different things, not just for picking teeth. And one of the things that caught my eye was, you know, people build things using toothpicks.
Sure, little models or something, or yeah.
Or yeah, even using them as support structures for like a gingerbread house or, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. So when I was in high school... We had a project where we had to build a bridge using toothpicks.
Oh, okay.
It haunts me to this day. To this day. That bridge, I had like this triangle design. I was using all these like most load-bearing, like efficient designs that I could find online. It was way too complicated and had to use so much glue. And I would just go home every lunch break for like a week and just be like, dry glue, please dry.
Wow. All right.
And I'm pretty sure it shattered when I drove.
Oh, no. Oh, mm-hmm. Dude.
It was one of my most traumatic building projects I've ever undertaken.
Okay. I'm sorry. Heck.
I'm having a moment.
You are. Yeah. Jeez. You know, it's in the past. Those toothpicks can't hurt you anymore, Annie.
But toothpicks can hurt. I've also been hurt by a toothpick. And that's something else that's going to come up in this outline. A lot of stuff has been unearthed.
Yeah, apparently. I'm sorry. If I had known, I might have, you know, like done a trigger warning or something. Like, I would have made sure.
For me, specifically.
Like, content warning. Like, hey, Annie, like, are you going to be okay if we do a toothpick episode? You could have told me. Jeez.
I honestly, until I sat down and started doing the research, that's when all this started coming out. Right. I was like, wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad it wasn't immediate because I was starting to feel like some kind of toothpick monster.
Which sounds terrifying. But no. It was really enjoyable. It was really enjoyable research, even if I do have these memories associated with it. But... I also have the positive memory of testing to see if brownies were done or cakes were done.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That is probably my number one. That's absolutely my number one use of toothpicks around the house. I don't usually use them as like a personal grooming thing. And I don't tend to make the sort of food products that would require a toothpick because I'm like, oh, no, that's no. I make giant stews. That's basically all I cook. Which I guess you could use a toothpick on. But anyway, but whenever I'm doing a baked good, I'm like, is the toothpick clean? Like, yeah, let's work that out.
Do you say it in that voice, that tone?
Look, you got to tell those cakes who's boss, okay?
Okay.
You got to make them understand that you are in charge.
Sure.
And you will not brook any shenanigans.
No cake shenanigans for you. I see. No. Okay. Well, perhaps we both have some unearthed issues here. But all right, let us get to our question.
Yes.
Toothpicks. What are they?
Well, toothpicks are a type of hand tool. They're small oblong sticks that often come to a point on at least one end, and are meant to, yes, either spear small bites of food to bring to your mouth, or to hold bits of food together, or to help you remove small bits of food from between your teeth. As an extension of part A, there they can also be used to fix a garnish in a cocktail glass, perhaps. They're often meant to be single use and disposable. They're like a good way to handle food without using your hands.
Yeah.
Not my most poetic, but that.
Yeah.
They're like the tiniest skewers. They're a simple but effective tool. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about those sword-shaped ones.
Yeah.
Those plastic sword ones.
Oh, yeah. Right. So good.
so good and so silly.
Right. Yes. Disposable toothpicks can indeed be made from plastic like that, or from wood, or from bamboo. If you're working with wood, you want to take a nice, strong but flexible wood log, like birch. It's usually birch in the industry. And then veneer it. Meaning you sort of peel it into long, thin strips, like ribbons almost. It's sort of like using a spiralizer, but on a log. It's if you've never seen video of this happening, it's wild and beautiful. Look it up. Super interesting. I also am personally, as I was doing the reading for this, I realized that I miss how it's made so much, because that just slightly bonkers level of extremely chill narration with like very off-putting background music and really boring mechanical processes. I was just like, oh gosh, this just really hits some kind of spot. I don't even like weed and this hits some kind of spot. At any rate, so you're working with birch, you veneer it, yes, and then either punch out flat-sided toothpicks or stamp and then mill down rounded toothpicks. Bamboo toothpicks, meanwhile, are made by splitting stalks of bamboo into long, thin rods that are then cut to length. In both cases, the toothpicks are then dried until they're hard and tumbled until they're smooth. Afterwards, they can be machined so that they're really sharp and pointy at one end and flat or grooved at the other. Some can be decorated at one end with a frill of paper or plastic. Some can be soaked with a flavored compound like mint or cinnamon during the processing to give the finished pick a breath-freshening flavor. Mm-hmm. Plastic toothpicks are generally made by filling, long, skinny toothpick-shaped molds with liquid plastic and then cooling and drying them until they're hard and then polishing or tumbling them smooth. Special decorative molds can be used to create shapes at one end, you know, like a cute little animal or a leaf or something, or a logo. You can also stamp specialized shapes out of wood veneer. This reminded me, when we were in Oahu and we went to that poke battle in the grocery store, one of the dishes of poke was served with a little Mickey Mouse toothpick.
That's right.
And I was like, well, this is heckin' cute.
And it was delicious.
Oh, gosh, it was delicious. Oh, man, poke. Okay, anyway. Yes, these disposable toothpicks can be packaged in boxes of a few hundred or individually wrapped in paper or plastic for distribution through, like, restaurants or airlines or hospitals or what have you. But not all toothpicks are disposable. You can use affordable but durable materials like stainless steel or fancier stuff like silver or some kind of decorative hardwood to make a reusable or even heirloom toothpick.
I think that was my favorite rabbit hole of this episode, was looking up fancy toothpicks from the past.
Yeah. Yesteryear's like collectible toothpicks. And it's just like, wait, what?
Way too big too. Like, they looked like they were unwieldy.
Yeah, like cigarette sized. And you're like, that's not quite okay.
It's like a big quill.
Yeah.
It was a good rabbit hole. I recommend it. Mm-hmm. Well, what about the nutrition?
Definitely don't eat a toothpick.
No.
That's really dangerous. Don't ingest something that hard and pointy. That's bad. As we will talk about a few times throughout this episode, that's very definitely do not do that.
No.
I don't usually give unequivocal nutrition advice, but this is one of them. Don't eat toothpicks.
I feel like that should be a shirt. Don't eat toothpicks.
Don't eat toothpicks. Now I'm like, no. Oh, man, I bet someone makes edible toothpicks out of heckin' something. Maybe like a good, I bet you could make like a decent enough like cracker situation, or maybe some kind of veggie spear, like a carrot, like a carrot stick.
Yeah. Ooh, I bet you could.
Okay. Oh. Future experimentation.
Listeners. Yeah. Let us know.
In the meanwhile.
Encountered this. We do have some numbers for you.
Uh-huh. A single birch tree can be made into about 4 million toothpicks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang. At its peak, Strong, Maine, the toothpick capital of the world, as it was once called, manufactured 95% of America's wooden toothpicks. During World War II, they were making over 75 billion annually.
That's wild.
Woo.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
Modern birch flat toothpicks can be punched out at a rate of 8,000 per minute. And processing facilities can handle about 747,500 toothpicks an hour, or about 20 million a day.
Wow. That's a lot of toothpicks.
It's a lot of toothpicks.
Wow. There is a specialty shop in Tokyo, Japan that has been producing high-quality toothpicks for over 300 years. According to their site, which I had to access via Google Translate. Yeah, a little grain of salt there. But according to the Google Translated site, only about 400 of these toothpicks can be made a day by a skilled craftsman. Or craftsman. I was unsure if it was multiple people.
Or a single person. Okay. All right.
Yeah, because they really didn't go into the specifics of any of that. In another statistic, they claim a craftsman can make 2,000 confectionery toothpicks a day, because they kind of differentiate between what's used to clean your teeth and what's just used
to get
confections.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is a dated number, but according to the CDC, from 1979 to 1982, there were around 8,100 toothpick-related injuries in the U.S. per year.
Oof. Oh, no.
I know. Toothpick-related injuries.
Be very careful. there are a number of world records regarding toothpicks. Here, I picked a few of my favorites, because if you really start going, you can really go. The most toothpicks placed in a beard is 3,500.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was achieved in 2018 after 3 hours and 13 minutes of work.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you get them out?
Very carefully. It's really, the photographs are really cool. Like the guy, or I'm not sure if cool is quite the right word for it, but very interesting. Like the guy just looks like his face is like made out of hedgehogs.
I like that.
That's pretty cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the most toothpicks put into a beard in a single minute is 62.
Is it the person, like the same person whose beard it is doing it?
Yeah. And I think it's the same dude who got both of those records.
Oh, so he's okay.
Yeah, he's
this
really
is
going
like his
for
niche.
It. Yeah.
Okay.
The most toothpicks rotated in one's mouth simultaneously is 66 toothpicks.
That sounds dangerous to me.
Yes, I know, right? Oh, back. Toothpick sculptures. The tallest toothpick sculpture on record was 5.09 meters. That's 16.7 feet. I'm not sure what it was of. The smallest toothpick sculpture was a replica of the Empire State Building that was made from a single toothpick, and it stood 19.86 millimeters. That's about 0.78 inches.
Was it just a toothpick?
No, it was all carved. It was all...
Okay.
It was all okay. Like, yeah, yeah.
I'm just imagining somebody showing up and being like...
I'm being like, here it is. I have made this tower.
It's the Empire State.
Don't you see the likeness?
I mean, it's not incorrect. All right. Some have written about the villainization of the toothpick, how it's used to signify a villain or perhaps someone who is just not the best, maybe up to no good.
A little bit unsavory.
Yes. But on the other hand, how at some points it has also been a symbol of like coolness.
Yeah, that like James Dean kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. And this is a part of Laszlo's Jackie Daytona disguise in the show What We Do in the Shadows on FX, where he puts in the toothpick. And it's when he removes the toothpick that Jim the vampire slash Mark Hamill sees that he is truly a vampire and recognizes him for what he is.
And that he is not, in fact, normal human bartender? Yeah.
Yes. That episode is so good. Oh, I highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. That's just one example of many of the toothpick. And we'll talk about more examples in our history section.
Oh, we will. And we're going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts? Time ends. Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So there's been surprisingly a lot of academic inquiry into toothpicks.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, toothpicks go way back.
They do. So the consensus is that humans have probably been using tools to pick their teeth since pretty much forever. Anthropologists suggest that the grooves on the teeth of some Neanderthal remains were made by the use of roughly crafted rudimentary toothpicks, most likely constructed of stiff grass or something like that. In 298 BCE, a tyrant of Syracuse named Agathocles allegedly was killed after using a poison-soaked toothpick. Toothpick intrigue! And according to popular legend, in ancient Roman times, Emperor Nero allegedly also entered a dining hall with a silver toothpick in his mouth. And indeed, throughout history, toothpicks have been made of all kinds of fancy materials and in all kinds of shapes. And yeah, remember, this was before standardized toothbrushes, toothpaste, and floss. So many of our past topics we've covered were at one time used as breath fresheners, for instance. This was something that was on people's minds. And as long as humans have been eating, and perhaps specifically meat, which human teeth are not necessarily well designed for, we've been looking for ways to keep our mouths, if not clean, then not, like, outright decaying.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The toothpick is one of the earliest non-lithic tools used by hominids that we know of, and picking one's teeth has been called one of our oldest habits. According to a few sources, toothpicks really took off in Japan during the Edo period, the early to mid-1600s specifically. Later, some toothpicks in Japan were inscribed with fortunes, and in one region there was a tradition of gifting Sinbei crackers with a fortune-wrapped toothpick inside, which made way for the fortune cookie, which is a different episode.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Whole separate
thing. I thought that was interesting. I got a fortune cookie lately, and what did it say? And I was offended. I was like, I don't need your judgment, fortune cookie.
Okay.
It was basically like, get your act together or else.
Oh, wow. Well, like, if I had wanted that kind of read, I would have gone to my tarot cards or something.
That's right?
Right? Like, pardon. Jeez. You didn't have to come for me that hard, Cookie.
I know. I tried to, like, crumple it up and throw it away, but it's so light that nothing really happened.
Oh, my goodness.
Gosh darn it. Records indicate that an order of Portuguese nuns in the 16th century made money making a treat that was a sticky treat, sticky to the fingers. It got lodged in the teeth. So they further supported themselves by selling toothpicks in order for people to pick up the goods and then pick out the remaining debris in their teeth. That's clever. And some sources do suggest that a whole etiquette around when and where to use toothpicks arose around this time in Europe. I tried to access this because I desperately wanted to know more, but it was a page. I couldn't get to it. I believe that is true. That just makes sense to me that there was rules around it. But
oh, of course. Yeah.
Couldn't get any more specific than that. And those grooves we mentioned earlier, those grooves on the teeth of the Neanderthals, they have been puzzling anthropologists for years, but at least by 1911, a French anthropologist was suggesting that they were caused by toothpicks. And it should be noted, the Neanderthals sporting these grooves were uncovered all over. Indigenous Australians, Native Americans, Canary Islanders, and Upper Dynastic Egyptians, to name a few, though the oldest known examples are from Africa. A tooth from an archaeological site in Ethiopia with these grooves is estimated to be nearly 2 million years old.
Whew.
I know. However, some argue that even a lifetime of use of toothpicks could not have caused those grooves, and that something else must have been the cause. They suggest perhaps the toothpicks were used to relieve tooth pain, and then I know I saw another argument that was saying, like, just by the nature of these rudimentary toothpicks, it would take more force over time, and so you'd be digging deeper and deeper as you use them, the more you used them. So I don't know. There's still discussion and debate. And I tell you, people are really looking into this. So
yeah,
perhaps we'll have an update.
Yeah, no. I mean, because the study of dental hygiene through the ages is interesting to a lot of different people. And right. And, you know, like I just did an episode over on Brainstuff about the history of toothpaste and how, and how it intersects with these handheld tooth related tools, like early brush type things or stuff with fibrous type things that people were using. So, yeah. Really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. It has been fascinating research for real. The American industrial toothpick industry took off in the 19th century and is largely credited to Boston businessman Charles Forster, who was born in 1826 to a rich family in New England. The story goes that while working for his importer-exporter uncle in Brazil, he noticed that the indigenous Brazilians had excellent teeth, and he thought it was due to these handcrafted toothpicks that they were using. And this was during the Industrial Revolution-ish, so he got the idea to mass-produce toothpicks and export and sell them to South America. While he wasn't the most knowledgeable in the actual engineering arena, he was very, very business savvy and was able to get a patent and essentially a monopoly on toothpicks here in the U.S. He took inspiration from shoemaking technology, and by 1870, his factory was churning out millions of toothpicks a day. However, he still struggled at times to find a market. Many just whittled their own toothpicks when needed and didn't see the point in purchasing something that they could have just made, especially something that was a one-time use item. So to sell his product, Forster paid Harvard students to go around to restaurants and retail locations asking for toothpicks, sometimes causing quite a fuss when toothpicks weren't available. And lo and behold, Forster would show up in the next few days offering his wares, offering his toothpicks. To really seal the deal, the same students would return once the toothpicks had been purchased to ask for them.
Yeah, and I read that when they were purchasing, like, boxes from retail locations, the students would then immediately, you know, like they would be purchasing them with money that Forster had given them, and then they would just go back and hand the toothpicks back to Forster. And so it was a circle of toothpicks.
The great circle of toothpicks. We all know it. And through this, Forster really helped make the toothpick into something that was viewed as integral to the American dining experience. It was seen as ritualistic and cool, an accessory and a sign of status. It suggested that the toothpick chewer could afford to dine at a nice restaurant.
Through all this, there were still reusable toothpicks out there on the market as part of people's, like, personal, like, hygiene kits or personal carry kits. In the 1880s, surrounding all of this, there was an article in Harper's Bazaar that advised readers to avoid gold or silver toothpicks, as they could scratch your tooth enamel, and to avoid ivory toothpicks because those were unsanitary, but was promoting these disposable wooden toothpicks and quills, and recommended using them quickly and without drawing any unnecessary attention. You know, don't make any noise. Don't, like, try to, like, hide your mouth with a napkin while you're doing it. Just do it and be done with it.
Don't draw attention to your toothpick.
Yeah.
Well, on the other side of the spectrum, later in films, toothpicks and using toothpicks could represent a menacing villain or an extension of the strong, brooding hero. It was an item actors could use to emphasize a point or to simply give a character an outlet to express an emotion. At his peak, Forster was producing 500 million toothpicks a year, and several competitors started up in the state of Maine in response, including Strong Maine. Yes, later, the toothpick capital of the world. More on that later. And in 1884, the New York Times published an editorial about the author's dismay of women using toothpicks. Writing that women, quote, cannot feel at ease on rising in the morning unless they consume two or three toothpicks before breakfast.
Gosh, the women of our day boldly using toothpicks. How dare they?
boldly going where no toothpick has gone before. My, oh my.
Well.
I actually was confused when I first read the article because I was like, is this negative? And then someone kindly explained it. And I was like, oh okay, I got you. Like, they're just using a lot of toothpicks. Is that bad?
Acting like men used having dental hygiene. How dare they?
Goodness. Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Well.
And yes, at certain points throughout the 19th and 20th century, toothpicks were viewed as a sign of rudeness and or poor health.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in 1904, Forster showed off his fancy round toothpicks at the St. Louis World's Fair.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. According to one source I read, mothers wrapping a toothpick with cotton to swab a baby's ears and nose may have led to the invention of the Q-tip in the 1920s. It was a really interesting article. It was about how the toothpick lends itself to a lot of different uses and has in that way sort of led to other things to be invented.
Yeah. And I have seen that fact in separate articles about Q-tips before. Mm-hmm. So, who knows? Mm-hmm. At some point during World War II, facing supply shortages of many different things, the U.S. Department of Commerce called a conference to standardize American toothpick sizes. It was like, no more of these wastefully large toothpicks.
Right.
And that is how, apparently, we wound up with the then standard, at any rate, of a 2-inch length for round toothpicks, and a 2.375-inch length for flat toothpicks.
Wow. All right. I like specificity.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued by where it comes from, but I like it. And then, in 1941, author Sherwood Anderson died from complications after swallowing a toothpick on a cruise.
Oh, no.
It's unsure if it was a food or drink item that was the cause, because I read something that said it was like a sausage situation, and then I read something that was a cocktail drink, so I'm not sure. But whatever the case was, toothpicks were, this was around the time they were showing up in cocktails, so that might be one of the reasons people were like, that's definitely what it was. But yeah, some believe that President Warren G. Harding, a frequent toothpick chewer, also died via toothpick. So, yeah, watch out. Don't mess with it. And yes, once the toothpick capital of the world, Strong, Maine's last American wooden toothpick factory closed in 2003. Just not as much demand for the toothpick.
Yeah.
I have conflicting thoughts. Conflicted. But the history is certainly interesting.
Yes. Oh, so cool.
Yeah. It was a fun one. I recommend the fancy toothpick rabbit hole. There's some really great images out there. And if any of you have any fancy toothpicks, oh my gosh, you've got to let us know.
Yes, we would love so much to hear about your toothpick pleasure and pain.
Yes, do you also have toothpick trauma? You can contact us. But in the meantime, we do have some listener mail for you.
But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada.
But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a saver team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with the snow mail.
Toothpick.
Very violent listener mail intro.
That was. You should have seen the hand gestures, listeners.
It was very intense.
It was quite intense. There was a look in my eye.
I was glad we were over Skype. Heck.
We should start this one. We want to thank some listeners, mysterious listeners, who sent us marzipan. We got two packages of marzipan. There was no name on either of the packages. It might have been from the same person. They just came at different times. I'm not sure, but thank you.
Yes, yes,
yes. So we got to try it. I got my first taste. The shapes, they're so cute. They're little fruits.
Yeah.
Like apples and oranges and limes. And I really enjoyed it. I liked the texture a lot. And I'm very excited to share these. We got a decent number of marzipan to share, to dole out. So excited.
Very exciting. So thank you.
Yes. And also, I really appreciate how many listeners wrote in. I got a confession to make. I guess I don't know how to work Instagram. I logged in there today and I thought I'd been like keeping pretty regularly, like answering. I guess I just didn't realize there's that whole other like third tab that was, you know, unknown. Like you should check and see whether you know this person.
Oh.
So I was answering messages that were from like 2 years ago.
Today. No.
But I appreciated how many of you wrote in. As I was diving into that about how you loved the marzipan hedgehog, how you stopped and looked it up and loved the marzipan hedgehog.
Oh, yay!
Cool. Yeah.
Because it is glorious. Yes.
It is absolutely glorious. All right. So Leslie sent a picture of some peanut butter for the recent National Peanut Butter Day. And wrote, this one goes out to you, Annie. Also, did you know the Peanut Butter Council has a spoon that is engraved with peanut butter is my favorite food group? I got one in a kit recently and thought of you. We currently have 4 peanut butters in my house. Creamy, crunchy, honey roasted creamy, all Peter Pan because the spouse has opinions on peanut butter brands.
Okay.
And a jar of Big Spoon nut butters in Durham. There was a jar of regular peanut butter in the hotel room we stayed in on our wedding night near the mini fridge. And of course, one of our friends opened it, so we had to take it. And the salted peanuts. Yes. Yes. to all the peanut butter. Yes, to peanut butter on the wedding night. Yes, to peanut butter opinions. And all of these different types. I know Joe have at least 20 jars of peanut butter right now due to circumstances that were kind of out of my control. But I'm not mad about it.
Is that also due to the National Peanut Council?
Yes. Okay. Yes, yeah. Yes.
Oh, y'all, we got to take this amazing field trip that the Peanut Council sponsored and got to go out to Alabama and meet some farmers and just really, really interesting human people. And we got this great tape, and then the world sort of exploded, and we haven't had the capacity to put together a little mini series from that yet. We need to.
Yeah.
The peanut.
It was cool.
The peanut farm machinery was so fascinating.
Yes. And listeners, in one of the most endearing mix-ups I've ever encountered, they accidentally hired like a party bus
yeah.
to transport us around.
So it was a bunch of like food journalists on this party bus in peanut fields. And it was delightful. It was delightful.
It's hard to put into words how delightful it was.
But they also sent us each a flat of peanut butter.
Yes. No joke. It was awesome. It was so cool to see how it was made. So hopefully one day soon-ish we can pull that together because it was really good.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. In the meanwhile, John, who also sent us an amazing package, wrote, I love learning more about so many foods. Some I love, others I know little about. I've lived in Japan for about 20 years, and all the pop culture references give me a clue of what's going on outside my culture. I don't get into TV shows or movies. Horror. Oh gosh, no, I'm a wimp. I can't watch that. Now I know a bit more of what Bob's Burgers and various Star Wars movies and more are about. And then John told us a bit about some of the goodies he sent, along with some other notes. Horikake rice sprinkles. Did Lauren mention that she takes a bit of horikake and eats it straight in an episode long ago? Yes, I did. When I want something flavorful and savory but don't want a snack, that's what I do. Sukiyaki flavor tastes kind of like Bako's imitation bacon bits, which I'll also eat a bit of straight. This is my favorite flavor for eating straight. Others I put on rice. Do as you like. The Google Translate app usually does an okay/good job of translating Japanese. The shichimi spice is from a small shop in Nikko. Nikko is one of Japan's top tourist spots and just 2 hours west of my home. It was a good place to go to get most of these items for you. I've lived in Fukushima Prefecture for 4 years. Proud of it. I'm a part of a group making calendars to show the world what Fukushima is actually like. A nice place. The back of the calendar explains the project more. This year, my photo is on the cover. From the site listed on the last page of the calendar, www.thisisfukushima.org, you can scroll down to previous year's calendars and download them free as PDFs. By the time you receive this, the 2022 calendar should be up on the site. And then, furthermore, he commented, durian, the stinky cheese/natto of fruits. I like blue cheese and durian. Both were acquired tastes. Natto, the texture gets me, and I struggled to get it down.
I love it. Oh, I still got that durian ice cream, Lauren.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I will say, yeah. I love the flavor of natto. I can understand the texture being a thing, and I do think also so we had that Facebook Live show called Snack Stuff for a while. Mm-hmm. Annie was the producer on it, and Ben Bolin and I were on camera. Ben Bolin from Stuff They Don't Want You to Know and stuff like that, and like Ben Bolin and I have had some adventures, y'all. Like, I mean, like, we've worked pretty closely for a number of years and we're like pretty tight. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest judgment face I've ever gotten from him was when I ate a bite of natto and I was like, oh yeah, that's fine. He like gave me this look. He was like, what kind of inhuman monster are, like, how? I'm not mad. I'm just impressed. Like, it was like a lot of face. I was just like, oh, okay, heck.
A lot of emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've had natto once. And I feel like the biggest thing I remember was that I liked the taste, but it was a pain to eat. Like, I remember it being like,
It's just sort of stringy. Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's a whole thing. But yeah. I liked the taste.
At any rate, yeah, not to in no way to shame anyone for anything that they like or dislike. It was just very funny. I was like, really, this is the moment?
This is the thing. Yeah, you all ate some strange. Some items I will say I was unfamiliar with and sounded strange to my particular taste. Put it that way. Yeah, but she did it spectacularly.
Yeah, you know, I can't think of a single thing on there that we ate on there that I wouldn't eat again. I think my least favorite thing was the spoiled milk flavored Jelly Belly.
Oh,
that was the only thing I didn't like because
it tasted awful.
Because it tasted like spoiled milk. That's not good.
Yeah,
nobody wants that. No, everything else, yeah. I'm like, sure, that's fine. Insects, rattlesnake, yeah, do what you want. That's okay.
I think that ranch flavored soda, that made my stomach turn.
No.
That made my stomach.
I mean, it's not like bad. I mean, it's not like good.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, you're being nice about it, but sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like, that's like one of my very rare things I really avoid, but yeah, it was fine. It's not like I did a spit take like it was Dr. Pepper or something, but it was a lot. There's a lot going on.
That is it. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. That's awesome about the calendar. The calendars are lovely. John sent us a bunch of calendars.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like kind of determined to slip in a random reference in every episode just for you, John, so you can keep up on, yeah, just for like our own integrity. We can keep you up to date on the pop culture. What's going on?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Very important.
Our very specific
niche
area. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. We got you. We got you. We'll keep you up to date. And thank you so much again for sending the package. It was very well received,
yes.
And it was spread out.
Yes,
everyone was very happy.
You.
Yes. And thanks to both of these listeners for writing in. Thanks to the mysterious sender of the marzipan, or senders of the marzipan.
Uh-huh.
If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Yes. All three places we are at SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy. Yeah. Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.